The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good times.
But so many poor choices.
We are in progress. I am Sarah. This is the Homance Chronicles. That's Nicole.
Yep. Here I am.
I mean, I got all the key points. It just didn't go in the order they normally go in.
And I normally introduce myself, but it's all right. Nope.
I got you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Discombobulation continues.
I've got an extra podcast guest here. Miss Emma, podcast Corgi, is demanding my attention as soon as we're ready to hit record. So
as always.
Here she is, putting all her fur on my chapstick and having her hair stick to my lips.
Oh, that's one of the things I just hate. I hate it the most when that happens. Hate it a lot. Good for you.
Okay. That's like going to kill everybody's ears. So how about we not do that? Oh my gosh.
She's so funny.
Whenever we record on a different day, like whenever we have like
A change in our routine,
a difference in schedule. This is what happens.
Yeah, I get it though. Same.
Chaos is what happens.
I literally said that to myself as I was driving home. I was like, this is just chaos. I can't ever schedule an appointment on Monday morning ever again. That's just a waterfall. I can't do it.
Oh man. Well, and I was behind on scheduling our April sessions. So we already know one of the weeks we'll be recording on a Tuesday instead of a Monday. So we have weeks to anticipate that it's going to be chaotic, but we're going to forget. And then the time's going to come and we're going to be like, what the fuck's going on? And have a weird intro.
When did we have a normal intro? When was the last time? When? Tell me. Because I don't remember.
I don't know at this point either. So.
It's so funny. All right. Well, Mercury is almost in retrograde.
Is it?
Yeah. That's why the fuckery is afoot.
I didn't realize that Mercury was going back in retrograde. I thought it was just other planets that were different types of disruptive.
No, they're joining in the chorus now. It's just a whole litany of things.
Oh. All right. Well, perfect.
Here we are. Perfect. Neat. All right. Okay. So I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah. As ready as I'm going to be, I think.
All right, cool. So our hoe of history today is Angela Burdette Coutts. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it's super interesting to kind of end the Women's Month?
Women's History Month.
Thank you. I was like, there's a word missing in that string. I'm missing a key point there. But yeah, so I found her. I was really kind of struggling on who to do. I wanted to do somebody who was like not necessarily like still living, but somebody who kind of set the tone and did it their own way. You know how we do. So I struggled to find somebody to inspire me this week, but I finally found Angela, and I'll tell you why. So she was born on April 21st, 1814 in London, England. She was the daughter to a famous and radical politician called Sir Francis Burdett. He was a fifth baronet. And it's a proponent of equal electoral districts. Oh, sorry. So he was a proponent of equal electoral districts, voting by ballot, and universal male suffrage. So like, he was definitely one of those people that people were like, what? Who do you think you are talking like that to me? And he was like, no, this is actually real. And so he was considered a radical because he was like, equality, be good people, stuff like that. And he was in parliament.
And
okay. Yeah.
So, he was actually just liberal.
Yeah. Yeah. But not the crazy liberal, no.
Well, yeah. I mean,
he wasn't off the charts for today's society.
Right. But he was off the charts for back then. So that's why he was a radical.
They're like, oh, voting? What? And then her mother, Sophia Coutts, she was actually the daughter of Thomas Coutts, the founder of the baking house Coutts and Company. So she came from like money, and she was one of six children. There's not a lot about her upbringing, if you will. She was just an affluent lady in the 1800s. Mom and dad's family were both loaded and notable in society. So she had access to like a lot of upper class people, experiences, et cetera, including like, you know, how to hold herself in society and how to like speak to people and all the things. So she also had access to like the prime minister because of all the people that her parents knew. So one day, boop, in 1822, so she is just under, she's 12 years old, right? Yep. She's 12. Her grandpa passes away. Now, her grandfather on her mom's side was married to a second wife. And then, so she basically inherited everything that grandpa had. Then 14 years after that, in 1836, the step-grandma passed away. And so she was 23 years old. She became the richest woman in all of the lands. She inherited 50% share of the bake, which was about 1.8 million euro back then. So
why did it skip over her mom?
Because her mother, I don't know. That's a good question. But because I think maybe because her mom was married. That's a really good question. I have no idea. Either way, she was the last of six children too. So why her? I have no clue. Maybe she was a favorite. Maybe something by default.
That's
happened.
A lot of money that could be split amongst.
But I think also
instead of just it all going to a favorite, but okay.
Well, also there's this thing called royal license. So I don't know if there was like a rule that everything had to go to one person to continue with the name or not. I don't really know. I don't know a lot about that, like why. I just know that's what happened. So by royal license, I think it's how you say it, license, she took the name Burdick Coutts because her grandpa on her mother's side passed away. So in doing that, she became like a part of the inner circle. Again, I don't understand all the rules of society in the 1800s in Europe, especially in London, but she made it. She was in. And so that meant she was in the mix.
I'm just like, she got the golden ticket.
She really freaking did. So she was cutting it up. She became known as the richest heiress in England, and she chose to live with her former governess, Hannah Meredith or Brown. I don't know if it was Meredith or Brown or both. Different sources said different things, but her former governess became her companion, and she lived with her for about 52 years. So like,
holy shit.
I don't know if it was just like you and I, like, well, we're good on everything. We're just going to live with each other for the rest of our time together, or if they were like a couple. So on top of inheriting 50% of the, you know, the bank's whatever, she also inherited a couple of different like pieces of property, including an estate just outside of London called Holly Lodge Estate, and was absolutely famous for hosting receptions there. She not only hosted Queen Victoria, but she also hosted future Queen Mary at Holly Lodge. She also, so this is going to be like a peek into like how generous she was with her money and the people around her. I'm watching you do all of what you just did, and you're just fucking adorable. I just watched Nicole yawn. Look at her microphone. Cross her eyes though, she noticed something, and then like pat it off of her microphone. Why are you adorable?
Oh, well, thank you. I feel terrible about yawning so much while you're telling the story because the story is not boring.
I know.
I think I just had this like adrenaline come down
mm-hmm.
after work. I don't know. I was definitely bouncing around all these different places in my brain today.
Oh yeah,
and
mental
so now
gymnastics.
That I'm like sitting here and like focusing, it's like, oh, I guess I'm tired.
Yeah, same, but I'm the one reading it, so we can't both fall asleep though.
No, I'm so sorry. I don't mean
don't
to
be.
keep yawning.
Listen, I'm not offended. I too am yawning. You don't have to be apologetic. I get it. Just you're adorable. Okay. So just a peek into how generous she actually was, she decided to create a housing development to provide, and I quote, suitable residences for her staff. So although she had all this money, all this affluence, she certainly was concerned for the people that were working for her. So she developed little cottages for every person that needed one, and they had their own little village, and it became known as Holly Village. And they were all like super stoked about it. Like, who wouldn't be? Like, your employer just gave you a house.
Yeah, I mean, for that era, that would be also a golden ticket. It's as close as you're going to get to having things handed to you. I mean, you're still working, but it's
right.
It's not like the same type of work as most.
Yeah. And also you're not forced to live in your, like, you know,
yeah,
employer's quarters with them. How awkward.
Yeah.
So not only
I'm just now picturing Downton Abbey.
Yeah. There you go. So not only was she incredibly generous with the people that worked for her, she was insanely generous to society. She donated large sums to various organizations, communities, and charities and people. So she was friends with Charles Dickens, and at one point they were so concerned with the sex work that was happening in Piccadilly, where she was from, that she and Charles decided to co-found a home for young women who had, quoting, turned to a life of immorality, including sex workers and theft, or sex work and theft. So at this stage, it became known as the Urania Cottage. The Duke of Wellington absolutely advised her against it due to the perception of being tangled up in that, like, kind of like society and that mess. But she was absolutely not one for politics and chose her charities with no special decree. She was definitely in it for, I need to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did she start this cottage for wayward ladies, she built two churches, ended up building a primary school in Westminster known as the Burdick Coutts and Townshend Foundation, Church of England Primary School, using funds from the Townshend estate. So, like, she partnered up with all these different people who had money, and I want to assume she was like, you should use your money for good and give these people a church, and then you can write it off on your taxes. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that was a thing, but I really feel like she was absolutely one of those people who pushed people who had money to be better.
Well, it sounds like at least less judgmental.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could judge all they want, just give them money. So she also became focused on East London, where there's a deprived area called Bethnal Green. It needed a little bit of regeneration. So she ended up helping to build homes and provided necessary infrastructure, including essentials such as a fresh water supply. Like, they didn't even have fucking water at that time. And this is the mid 1800s at this point. We're talking like 1830s and 40s. And 50s and 60s. Like, she just continued this philanthropic lifestyle for decades because she could. In 1860,
I would do the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
If I was gifted or inherited that kind of a windfall, I'd be sharing the love.
Yeah, absolutely. Same. Not to be like, oh, look at me, look at me. But it's like, I know how to struggle. I know what it feels like when somebody helps you. You're overwhelmed with just joy and being thankful. So in 1869, she founded the Columbia Market, and her project in Columbia Square was the first step in creating, like, social housing for the people who needed it the most in the city. In Victoria Park, Hackney, she paid to bring an installation of a drinking fountain to provide clean water for some of the people in society who just didn't have access to shit. She actually ended up also providing provisions, I guess you could say. She gave money to Florence Nightingale, who was at that time in the Crimean War and was assisting, you know, their hygiene standards and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
She funded
nurse of all nurses.
Yep, exactly. She funded the army hospitals based in South Africa. Like, Florence wouldn't have been able to do what she needed to do if Angela didn't exist, period.
Wow. Just,
it's wild to think.
I remember reading a book about Florence Nightingale when I was, I don't know, 13, 14, maybe. It wasn't mm-hmm. even for school or for a book report or anything. I just found her fascinating.
Right? I think the name Florence Nightingale was fascinating to me. That phrase in and of itself. I don't know why. So not only did she help those in need that were other in other continents, she also looked at the people who were walking by her in the streets, including young children who were in the factories doing, you know, manual labor to support their family members who didn't have access to public education because they were working. So she set up classes for these kids to learn valuable life skills and also help them with, you know, the things they needed for their trade that they were in. So she was all over it. It didn't matter what, where, who. I mean, she collected paintings and all that shit along the way too.
That seems like a typical pastime that we've learned about with a lot of these women.
Right.
Well, because it's one thing that's going to hold value.
Yep, exactly. So,
even if you lose all of your money, those paintings are still worth something. You know, I feel like as much as they liked art, they also understood the investment.
Right. So, didn't stop there though. She went on to animals. She, like her father, was absolutely keen to champion the protection of animals. He played an important role in this. He was the first politician to sponsor an act against cruelty to animals. So, like, what a hero, what a king. She followed in his footsteps, and in 1870, she became the president of the Ladies' Committee of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Her involvement, close involvement to this project, helped provide the foundations for the foundation that continues to exist today, RSPCA. Blowing my mind. Like, she did so much. So, she was also friends with people who were responsible for influencing society. And there was a gentleman that wrote under a pen name for Queen Victoria's coronation. And in that, he referred to her as Miss Angelique Coutts. And this caused just a flurry of interest and curiosity, and people really super wanted to know who the fuck she was. Not only that, but she had to stave off all of these marriage proposals, like, constantly. And she did that by hanging out with Hannah. Like, her and Hannah, where she was like, nah, dog, I'm all set. You're messy. No, thank you. So even further,
that's interesting.
Yeah, like, further curiously, was she not interested because she was fulfilled by Hannah, or was she like, I don't completely understand, because there's not a lot about her and her relationship with Miss Hannah. So in 1871, Queen Victoria recognized her for her contributions, conferring a peerage under the title Baroness Burdett Coutts of Highgate and Brookfield. So Highgate is where the Holly Village is, and Brookfield was another one of her places. So she was just admired by all, essentially. She really had no enemies. There was not one person that I read that was like, fuck this lady. She loved
I mean, she,
by all.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, she's kind of a nun slash Mother Teresa.
Yes, exactly. And I'm like breezing over all of this. This is just some. There is a litany of things. There's a massive, massive list of things that she did. She continued to play a philanthropist for almost her entire life. On the 18th of July in 1872, she became the first woman to be presented with the Freedom of the City of London at the Guildhall. And in 1874, she became Edinburgh's first woman freeman and was also presented with the freedom of that city. Like, this is still the 1800s. And this woman is being recognized at this level. Like, it's aggressive.
Well, her father would be proud, oh, considering so proud. He was all about equal rights.
Right. So, so proud. In 1878, sadly, Hannah passed away. And as I've said several times, she was absolutely devoted to Hannah. She was her companion. There was no questioning it. And when she passed away, she wrote to a friend, "My poor darling, the companion and sunshine of my life for 52 years. So, like, I was just so curious. I imagine, I don't know, they had a romance at the very least.
Well, I guess they had a romance. I don't know. It seems like she could have been more of a mother figure, like a mother who's a best friend or something. Well, I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, because she was, I'm assuming, older than her, since the relationship started out with
her being
Hannah.
Infamous.
Yeah. And you would hope that it wasn't like a grooming situation. Because like nowadays, if somebody is older and they have a relationship with someone who's younger, and then when they become of age, they turn into something more or something romantic, then it's definitely considered grooming.
Creepy. But yeah,
which would, I know, I took this in a very creepy direction,
no,
but
good.
The curiosity of the dynamics of their relationship is really getting to me, because I'm like, how much older was she?
Right.
She couldn't have been that much older if they were together for 50 years.
Yeah, right. I mean, a governess is like a nanny, right? So,
yeah.
Maybe 10 plus years older than her. Maybe.
Let's just say that they had a best friend romance and leave it pure, because this woman seems to be a saint.
Yes. Get ready for more.
Okay.
So one thing I forgot to mention was that she was also very passionate about supporting hospitals. And she funded vital medical research, such as cancer research.
Oh my God. She's rolling over in her grave right now with the fact that, like, we haven't really made it that much further, and that there's, you know, people still dying of cancer every day. She's probably like, what the fuck?
So, yes, she gave an interest-free loan to build Royal Marsden Hospital and continued to finance through donations to support it once it was up and running. I don't know what other topic can I touch? Really, honestly, truly. She's got animals. She's got hospitals, the sick and the poor. She's got war-torn hospital needs in other countries. Women who needed help. Oh, by the way, the cottage, the Urania College that they set up, was also had gardens, so that it was like a home, you know, it was like a cozy place to go, so people wouldn't fear it. So they had gardens where women would learn how to cultivate their own food. Like,
I was gonna say, so that they could feed themselves.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like, insane. Like, I just, what other topics have I not covered? Like, where else?
Mm-hmm. She had early education for kids who were stuck in doing child labor jobs.
Yeah. Donated. She built churches, donated to them. She was just, I mean, she even donated large amounts of money to Ireland because of the Great Potato Famine. Like, the whole country of Ireland received a donation from her. Freaking insane. So, she also sent up relief centers for basics such as flour, corn, and sugar in Ireland. And she even went to, she even went so far as including Jerusalem. She provided funds for Charles Williams Wilson to conduct an ordnance survey to search a new and vital water supply for Jerusalem. Like, I don't know if she ever traveled outside of England, to be honest with you. So back to her companionship. 3 years later, on February 12th, in 1881, she shocked the entirety of Europe by marrying her secretary, 27-year-old William Lehman Amstead Bartlett. He was a member of Parliament for Westminster. However, since he was born in the United States, although both of his parents, grandparents were from England, he did not assume the royal license for the surname Coutts. He was not called a baron, and because of a clause in her step grandmother's will forbidding her to marry a foreign national, it was invoked, and she had to forfeit 3/5 of her income to her sister. So I imagine that she was, in fact, just a companion to our friend Hannah, and I think that she did finally find actual romantic love in her 60s. She was 67 years old.
And this guy was 27?
Yep. Everybody was so baffled because not only was he so many years her junior, like decades, years her junior, she had to give up all of her money, gave it all away to her sister. And Lord knows what that woman did with it. We have no idea.
Hmm.
I mean, we do. I just haven't looked. So
there's so many questions because he was U.S. born, but that didn't stop him from having a role in Parliament.
Yes.
You're able. Okay.
Yes.
And so he didn't need to get married to stay.
No, there was love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, love-ish, as far as we know.
Whatever, yeah.
I mean, he still is getting a sweet deal here.
Fucking sweet deal.
So I don't, I mean, okay. Yeah, it was love, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they were married. So unfortunately, she passes away on December 1906 from acute bronchitis. So they were together the whole time, though. Like, they didn't get divorced. Again, don't know what happened to him, but.
Well, but they got married when she was 67. How old did she live to be?
So from 81, 91, 77, 80 something years old.
Okay.
82. So she passed away in her home at number 1 Stratton Street in Piccadilly. They laid her to rest, or they laid her out at her home, you know, in funeral home fashion. They didn't have those back then. People passed away in their homes. They had the parlor for that reason. And roughly 30,000 people came to pay their respects. They put her in a large elm coffin lined with rich white silk and a ruffled pillow made of white silk. She had a silk sheet and face cloth, and she lay on a mattress of white wool, and also a lead coffin to contain this, plus an oak outer coffin. She had 3 coffins. three of them. The Dean of Westminster offered to bury her in the abbey on the condition that the remains be cremated, and her husband told the Dean and chapter that he agreed to this. However, on the day before the funeral, he informed them that cremation would not take place. At that stage, the sub-dean in charge, while the real dean was in the country, he agreed to hold the funeral anyway, and the two clergymen of the abbey stayed away in protest. So for some reason, they were like upset that she wasn't cremated, and there was some drama at the end. I don't know any drama that happened while she was alive. It was all when she passed away.
Crazy.
She was buried on the 5th of January in 1907, but due to the fact that she was delivered without being cremated, she was buried upright. I have no idea why.
I mean, it sounds like they just didn't have space for her. I mean, they obviously had space, but they didn't want to make space for her.
Well, she was supposed to be cremated.
Yeah.
Oh, they had to bury her standing up. So her barony ended with her as well. She didn't pass it on. Her husband didn't pass it on, whatever.
He couldn't take the name, and they didn't have any children because she was 67 when they were married. So,
Right. So, although she was buried in 1907, her stone wasn't laid until April of 1908. A portrait of her is also included in the mural of the Heroic Women by Walter P. Starmer. It was unveiled in 1921 in the Church of St. Jude on the Hill in Hampstead Garden suburb of London. Let me just go over here now to my list of things that she's got. So Charles Dickens dedicated his novel, Martin Chuzzlewit, to her. And the book Fisherman's Lady by George MacDonald also has reference to her in a fictional faction. Let's see what else she's got. I'm not gonna read all of this. There's too many things. A lot of cool things. A lot of cool things happened for her. So a couple of different roles that she played. She was the president of the British Beekeepers Association.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course she's gonna be the kill the bees type, you know.
Naturally. President of the Ladies Committee of the RSPCA for England and Scotland. She funded church bells for the St. Paul's Cathedral. She funded cotton gins for Nigeria. She was the only female patron of the Queen's Medical College. Yeah, Medicinal College in Birmingham. She had a retail and wholesale produce market called Angela Burdett Kurtz Retail and Wholesale Produce Market, opened in 1869. She had a drinking fountain installed in Victoria Park, the Baroness Burdett Kurtz Drinking Fountain. She also had drinking fountains for the dogs. She helped the Turkish peasants and refugees of the 1877 Russo-Turkish War and got the Order of Medijaya for that. She had housing schemes for the working class set up. She had the London Ragged School Union, a sewing school for women, when the silk trade declined. Supported organizations for the Aboriginal peoples of Australia, the promotion of the fishing industry, placement of hundreds of destitute boys on training ships for the Navy and the Merchant Service, the financing of the first Ordnance Survey of Jerusalem to improve the sanitation, supporter of the British Horological Institute, which I don't even know what the fuck that is. It is the representative body.
Did
of
you
the
say like horticulture? Like,
nope. Horological industry.
Hmm.
I am assuming it's a museum. Oh, it's clocks. He purchased more than 100 Greek manuscripts in 1864 and transported them to England and presented them to Sir Roger Cholmondeley's school in Highgate. So, like, again, what?
I mean, she just was like, everything's important.
Yes, everything was fucking important to her. Yes. 100%. So, that is the story of Miss Angela Burdett Coutts.
Well, thank you.
Of course.
Thanks for sharing.
Figured I'd end Women's History Month with the most philanthropic lady on the planet.
Yeah.
Literally.
Most people in their early 20s aren't going to be spending their money the way that she did.
No. And I thought at first, like, it was going to go sideways because she got all this money when she was in her 20s and they were like talking about how she was getting paintings and stuff. And I was like, oh, here we go. She's a party girl. But nope, nope, nope. Shame on me. So listen to this. Greyfriars Bobby, a Skye Terrier who supposedly spent 14 years guarding his master's grave until his own death. She decided that in 1873, she was going to commission a commemorative statue and fountain to be erected at the southern end of George the Fourth Bridge in Edinburgh. So it is a dog. it's a statue of a dog protecting the fountain. Like, what?
You mean protecting insanity. The grave?
Yeah, sorry. Well, yeah, because the grave
drinking
wasn't
from
there.
The fountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So King Edward the Seventh, I think we remember him because of Queen Mary, right?
Mm-hmm.
After my mother, she is the most remarkable woman in the kingdom. That's how he described her.
Wow.
Yeah. She was 92.
Wow.
Right? So, like, if you remember, King Edward was like a sucky cup to his mom. Maybe that's...
I know, because who says that? Outside of my mother. Oh, Lord.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you for sharing that, you know, there were some bright lights.
Mm-hmm.
This woman was definitely a beacon in her time.
Absolutely. For so many people in so many different areas. Like, I wish there was more about how she managed to do all of this stuff. Like, how do you connect with people in Nigeria for cotton mills or gins or whatever? It's just insane. What?
Well, she had all the connections. That was the easy part. It was probably getting the resources to them is the hardest part, because who knows how many people attempted to try to like steal stuff along the way, or, you know, bribe her or mislead her or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Think about it. They didn't have digital currency back then. So like, in order for things to get funded, they physically had to move it.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like,
good Lord, I forgot.
Who knows
all
how many
part.
Times that she actually lost funds or things had to close or whatever because of greedy people.
Yeah. My. Oh yeah. So that's Angela.
Okay. Well, Angela's family is a little bit of a mystery, and like why she was chosen, then why the other sister was chosen. I mean, back in that day, usually you're giving things to males so that you mm-hmm. can continue to have the lineage passed on through the name,
right?
But they it must have saw there's something American. Special. They were like, she is an angel on earth. So.
I'm glad they did,
right?
Imagine how many things wouldn't have been
advanced
what they are now.
Yeah.
Right, Miss.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. So I figured I had to like, you know, make up for some of the sadder stories I've told.
Oh, so you just ran with a woman who has just an insane highlight reel.
Yeah, essentially her whole life is a highlight reel.
You're like, nothing but gold stars.
That's the new standard. So shout out to Wikipedia, historicuk.com, westminsterabbey.org, and britannica.org. That's
Yay.
cool.
Well, thank
That'll do
you.
it. Hell yeah.
Does that mean it's
Mechanical.com. And it's at a girl time. Yep.
okay. Atta girls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. My atta girl, I was going to do something lame, but now I just had something better pop into my head.
Let's do it.
So I'm going to tell you both.
All right.
My lame thing is that I spent 2.5 hours cleaning the washing machine.
That's not lame. That's dedication. I admire you for that.
Instead of being like, we're just going to kick this thing out and get a new one. I'm like, it can be cleaned. This can happen. You know, only 2.5 hours. You know how long I would probably shop for a new washer online?
Longer than 2.5 hours.
Longer than 2.5 hours.
100%. Knowing you, it would take you at least 3 weeks to come to a conclusion. And not in a bad way. You would have known about every faulty issue. Every explosion.
The better thing is that I am an aunt again. I have a new niece. So that is something good that happened to me. Not that I did.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank
to the
you.
Family. Yeah. How wonderful.
So.
Well, good on you. So did you do a load of laundry yet?
Kind of.
Dust it out. See how it
well,
works.
I cleaned the washing machine, then I ran empty, just to make sure there's no bits, floating around. And then I did kind of another like test run with the mattress cover,
which is like aggressive. I would have gone with a towel or three that I've.
Oh, well,
probably.
It was because with the mattress cover, I was going to put bleach in.
Oh, fair. Okay.
With it. So it was like another run with bleach. So I have not done laundry since. It's on the list of things to do. But I have run the washer a total of 3 times.
Hey, man. Proud of you. You're getting there. Atta girl, sis. Atta girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my atta girl is I have pulled the trigger on my own piece of equipment for traction and should be delivered hopefully this week so I can start doing my own physical therapy at my house to make sure I don't become an old, crooked, haggard lady.
You know, my chiropractor had suggested when I was doing neck traction that I could just lay on the floor with a rolled up washcloth under my neck and didn't have to like buy any like special contraptions.
Yeah, no, I'd like the special contraption because I can hang from my body. I can literally let gravity just do its job. And I can't lay on the ground at my house. My dogs will attack me. In the funniest way possible. I have no peace.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so I figure if I mount it in my red room, then I'll do it before I go to bed. And when I wake up, and I'll start my good, you know, traction routine so that I can not have arthritis in my body.
Speaking of bodies in alignment, I bought new pillows that should be showing up tomorrow.
Ooh, lovely. Let me know how they go.
I know they were pricey.
Yeah, I bet. I've been having some really strange issues almost my entire life where I wake up because my ears hurt, like on the inside of my ear. And it's not like my ear, like outside of it's getting folded in, nothing to do with that. It's like all internal pain. Like it's the strangest thing. I don't really even know how to describe it. Like I wouldn't be able to reach where I'm feeling the pain without a Q-tip. And so for a long time, I thought, oh, okay, it was my ears or the pillows or whatever. And so I've gone through countless, countless pillows. And I'm talking like.
Do you clench your teeth when you sleep?
12 to 13 different kinds. Yes what? And no. It depends.
12 yeah. to 13 pillows. So you're trying a new pillow every month?
Yeah. For my entire life, though. Like over the last. Let's say 5 years, I've really been like, you know, I got to kick this shit in the teeth because it's becoming a real problem.
And but it so probably has nothing to do with your pillow.
Right. I'm finding that now. So I was like, oh, I woke up on this really nice pillow and it's hurting again. I don't understand what the problem is. So I go to the doctor and they're like, well, I don't know what to help you with. Like, I don't see any abnormalities or whatever. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'm a mystery. I went online. I found a couple of people were also having the kind of same thing, but literally maybe a handful of things. That's it. And I'm like, all right, I'm just a weirdo. So I go to the chiropractor and he's like, oh, by the way, that's a neck thing. And so he fixed it. And between getting adjusted and laser therapy, it's gone. And
good.
I'm like, at this point, I'm like, can I go back and try all those pillows that I thought I didn't want?
It's so strange to me that you thought that your pillow was going to make a difference.
I didn't know. Because every time I fell asleep, I would wake up on my side and it would hurt. But my neck was fine. Like, the pain was literally in my ear. It didn't correlate. It didn't translate back into my neck. It didn't go back into my nothing. In my world, it was contained in my ear, like where my eardrum is. And I thought it was like an ear infection or something happening like that. I had no idea what was going on. And nobody else could help me either. So here we are.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I immediately was like, well, do you like clench or grind your teeth? Because that will cause your jaw to be off, which then, you know, then your ears get fucked up too.
Yeah. No, not really. I have a bite guard if I need it, but I sleep fairly sound when I can sleep. It's just getting to sleep that sucks.
Oh, man. Well,
yeah.
This Attagirl really turned into something.
Don't they all?
If you liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. It really helps us out if you tell your friends. You can request a Hoe of History for us to do a report on. You can go to Instagram at homance_chronicles, or you can email us homancepodcast@gmail.com. We also have our closed group on Facebook, the Homance Chronicles Judgment Free Zone, which I don't even know what's happening there. I guess I should go check that, huh?
Yes, as always, it's okay.
That's it.
All right, well, Homance out.